Now Monitor brings you the prize-winning interview program Meet the Press, produced by Lawrence Spivak. Ready for this unrehearsed conference are four of America's top news reporters, ready to talk with Senator Everett Dirksen, Minority Leader of the Senate, and Congressman Charles Halleck, Minority Leader of the House. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
For the first time in 8 years, the Republican Party enters the new session of Congress with the Senate, the House of Representatives, and the White House, all in control of the Democrats. In both branches of Congress, controversy already has developed over President-elect Kennedy's legislative program and the rules under which it will be considered. Our guests today are two men who play major roles in the efforts of the Republicans to stage a comeback in 1962 and 64, Senate Leader Everett Dirksen and House Leader Charles Halleck. Both have had 26 years of experience in Congress. Senator Dirksen, a lawyer and businessman, is a high-ranking member of the Republican Policy Committee. Representative Halleck also has had an active part in policy matters, and he served as the chairman of the 1960 Republican National Convention. We'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Senator Dirksen, the Republican platform pledged the Republican Party to best efforts to change present Rule 22, which permits a filibuster. What exactly, in your judgment, does best efforts mean?
Well, it might mean, of course, that you modify the rules so that instead of two-thirds of the members present in voting, you might hit upon three-fifths, although presently there is an effort, after extended debate, to have debate closed by a majority vote. However, the platform itself does not particularize, and you could go in either one of these two directions if you wanted to conform to the platform.
Well, can you tell us what direction the Republican members of the Senate are going?
There is some difference of opinion. I would say that a substantial majority of the Republicans would not go along with the idea of having cloture as a result of a majority vote. There are a larger number who probably would accept three-fifths, but it remains to be seen when the voting comes on next week exactly how they will comport themselves on a record vote.
How will you vote?
Well, I certainly will reject the idea of cloture as a result of a majority vote. I think I'm rather fluid on the so-called 60% or three-fifths. I have come to no stated and settled conclusion on that point.
Well, is there no Republican policy on this? Your platform promised to make a change. What change would you make as a result of the platform promise?
The point is,
you're one of the leaders, Senator.
You are not under obligation to accept everything that appears in the Republican platform. And I am not unmindful of the fact that 2 years ago, along with the majority leader, I was a co-sponsor of the rule that is presently on the Senate rulebook and under which we operate.
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Halleck, as Republican leader of the House, what plans do you have to accommodate your policies with the policies of the Republican governor of New York, Mr. Rockefeller?
Well, I don't know, Mr. Wilson, why a particular question is presented to me that would indicate that I would accommodate the Republican position in the House of Representatives with Mr. Rockefeller. Let me just say this, that we Republicans in the House of Representatives, many of us have been there a long time. In the past and under President Eisenhower, we have had affirmative programs to deal with all of the things that are presently talked about, like aid to depressed areas and school construction, increase in the minimum wage, highway improvement. I could go on with a lot more. We've had affirmative programs in respect to them, and so far as I have been able to discover, most Republicans have felt that we were doing about right in what we were doing. Now, as far as this Congress is concerned, I have said before and I say again, Ours shall not be a policy just of obstruction for obstruction. It shall be not a negative position. Rather, will our position be an affirmative, positive position. Might I say, so far as I can see, something of a projection of what have been the Republican Eisenhower principles of the last few years.
Well, may I...
Now then, as far as Governor Rockefeller is concerned, my door is open to Governor Rockefeller. It is open to Dick Nixon. It is open to Barry Goldwater. As far as I'm concerned, may I say again, we Republicans in the Congress have an initial responsibility to formulate a program and work for that program, a program that we believe is good for the country. If President Kennedy comes out with a program we think is good, we're going to be for it. But if we think it isn't good, then we're going to be against it. And I think that's the way it ought to be. But all Republicans will be consulted. We seek their cooperation, their advice as we go along in these very difficult, troublesome times.
You are going to consult Governor Rockefeller.
Well, whether you mean by that I'm going to call him up and ask him what he thinks about a given thing, I would say that Governor Rockefeller knows that he can call me anytime or come and see me anytime, and his suggestion certainly would carry some weight with me.
Mr. Bell.
Senator, you're going to have some rather controversial nominations before you shortly. Among these is the nomination which President-elect Kennedy expects to send to the Senate of Robert Weaver, who happens to be a Negro, for head of the Housing and Home Loan Agency. Two Democrats already have said they're opposed to him. What is the Republican position on Mr. Weaver at this point?
Actually, there is no Republican position on him. If you want to know my position, I think it goes back to a statement made by Senator Taft years ago when I asked him why he had voted to confirm Dean Acheson. He says, "I believe one is warranted only in raising a question as to the character and competence of a nominee, and that would go particularly for the cabinet, because I believe within reason the president is entitled to select a cabinet of his own choice. And so I would put it on that ground and nothing more. And certainly discrimination as to race would not enter into any judgment that I might render."
Well, carrying that a little farther, Senator, would this apply to Bobby Kennedy, too? The president is... It's all right for the president-elect to choose his own brother for attorney general, and the Republicans would have no objection to that.
Well, I certainly will not raise the nepotism issue. It has been in government for a long time. It has been assailed by the press and a great many others. I shall not raise it. I will confine my efforts, of course, to making a record as to character and competence and letting it stand at that.
Well, would you raise the issue that Bobby Kennedy has not tried cases of a lawyer?
Well, that involves a question of competence.
Well, is that completely competence? Isn't it a matter merely of experience? He's had wide experience. He's been in the Justice Department before. Are you going to ask what he did in the Justice Department before, how he's conducted himself as a lawyer previously?
Necessarily, you must. Because the Attorney General runs the entire department. And I think it is expected by tradition, if not by statutory requirement, that in cases of extraordinary moment and gravity, he should appear before the Supreme Court of the United States. Obviously, you would want one with excellent legal background in order to do a job like that.
Do you think the president-elect was wise in appointing his brother as attorney general?
It is not for me to pass upon the wisdom or prudence of a decision made by the president-elect of the United States.
Mr. Harkness.
Mr. Halleck, I've heard you quoted both ways, sir, and let me ask you today, what are your views on a Republican-Southern Democratic coalition in the House?
Well, I'm real glad you brought that up, Mr. Harkness. There's been a lot of talk about a coalition as if it were some sort of a sinister thing. There never has been a quid pro quo. So far as I know, there never will be. I was accused on this very program something less than a year ago of having made a deal to get the Landrum-Griffin passed. And supposedly the deal was that we wouldn't do a civil rights bill. Well, Clarence Brown of Ohio on the Rules Committee moved to report the civil rights bill to the floor, and we all voted for it. Now then, the true situation is simply this, we're now 174 Republicans strong in the House of Representatives. If we hadn't had one of our men from Indiana counted out in what I think was an unconscionable exercise of just straight bull power, well, we'd have had 175. But we'll make up our positions in respect to the things we believe in. And if any Democrat, north, south, east, or west, has brains enough and sense enough to see that we're right, then we welcome his vote.
Mr. Halleck, I'm still not sure whether you quoted correctly or incorrectly when you said you favored a coalition between the Republicans and the
Southern Conservatives. I never said I favored a coalition, Mr. Harkness. There was some statement to the effect that I had met with some of these people, and I have, and I've met with other people who are not from the South since I got back here for this Congress. But as a matter of making an agreement that would mean that on our side we'd do something we didn't believe in because we curried support on the other side from certain people, that just does not exist. And as a matter of fact, as it was mentioned by Mr. Brooks, that Mr. Dirksen and I, Senator Dirksen and I, have been here 26 years. Mine has been continuous in that time. But when I first came here, there were lots of Democrats voted with Republicans. We didn't have very many Republicans, but I think it was a good thing for the Republic that they did.
Let me put the question another way, a little more specific way. Would your Republican bloc in the House, 174 members, go along with this liberalizing of the House Rules Committee by purge or packing?
Well, let me just say this. Until I know what the Democrats are going to do, Mr. Harkness, I'm not in very good shape to say what we're going to do. And as a matter of fact, I don't know what the Republicans are going to do.
It's pretty plain what Southern Democrats are going to do, I would think.
That's right. But the Southern Democrats are not in the majority on the Democrat side, as I understand it. Now, I don't know about that. But I would just like, I served on the Rules Committee, Mr. Harkness, for a number of years, and the Rules Committee is cussed and discussed. But I would like to point out one mistake that many of you people in the business of disseminating news are in the habit of making. You know, all five of the key Kennedy proposals came to the floor of the House of Representatives in the last Congress. Minimum wage and coverage, school construction, depressed areas, housing. Well, civil rights came as one other one that slipped me at the moment. But all of those.
Medical care
for the aged. I thank you, Mr. Wilson. It slipped my mind for the moment. But now one of them came under calendar Wednesday. But as I remember it, there was not even an opportunity given to the Rules Committee to report. Now then, let me just say one other thing. We have four Republicans on the House Rules Committee under the present arrangement. I don't know whether that's going to prevail or not. We have one of our members was defeated, and one of them didn't run again. So I've got two places to fill. And I must say that a lot of people have kicked it around pretty loosely when they presume that you've got to have changes on the Democrat side. I don't know. I know that Carol Reese of Tennessee voted to send the school construction bill to the floor of the House of Representatives in the Rules Committee. And Republicans voted for other rules that brought these key measures to the floor of the House of Representatives.
Mr. Wilson.
Senator Dirksen, Mr. Halleck had just called the roll of the five matters of urgent legislation which the President-elect has said he would ask the Congress to enact, and quickly. Is there any item in that list of five on which the Republicans in the Senate would go along with the Democratic proposal?
I'm not sure, Mr. Wilson. The best answer I can give you is that we shall have substitute measures for every one of those
on the so-called urgent agenda.
Well, in any
event, will not disturb, some at least will not disturb, the medical care proposal. It only went on the books last September. It would seem to me unjustified to tinker with it at this time when it's had no opportunity for articulation in action at the state level. As for the rest of them, we shall have substitute proposals for everyone and seek to offer them as amendments or as substitutes on the floor.
They will not be identical.
No. No, in every case, they will not be identical.
May I ask you this? In view of a statement some days ago by Senator Case of New Jersey, in which I'm not attempting to quote him directly, but he implied that he thought the Republicans in the Senate should support some items of the Kennedy program. He didn't say which one. Do you expect to hold all of your Republicans for the substitute proposal?
I can indicate what they had in mind, particularly the so-called distressed areas bill. One was introduced from the majority side. One was introduced by Senator Scott of Pennsylvania. I introduced the one that was last presented under the incumbent administration in August of last year. With some refinement, that is before the Senate at the present time. So there will be different bills, but we'll try, of course, to get a common position on at least one acceptable substitute.
Mr. Spivak.
Congressman Halleck, there's been some question as to who today is the leader of the Republican Party. And I believe when you were asked whether it was to be Vice President Nixon, your answer was, I'm not going into that. What did you mean by that?
Well, Mr. Spivak, Mr. Nixon was our candidate for President of the United States. He made a good campaign. He stood for the things that, by and large, I stand for. He came within a gnat's eyebrow of being elected. Now, of course, he's going to continue to be an important voice in the Republican Party, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure as far as everybody's concerned.
Well,
now, I think it... Well, if you want to...
No, I just want to ask you, I'd like a responsive answer, if I may get it from you, for this. President Eisenhower was the leader of the party for 8 years. Now, obviously, he isn't the leader anymore as soon as he leaves his office.
That's right.
I don't think he wants to be, and you don't recognize him. Now, is the Republican Party leaderless, or do you have a leader?
Oh, no, the Republican Party isn't leaderless. Of course, you got Mr. Dirksen and me.
Yeah, well, that's too. Well, are you then?
Well, no, that was a little facetious. We have more Republicans in the House of Representatives than we had before, and the Republican Party is not leaderless. I have said that the initial responsibility, we've just been talking about bills that are presently to come before the Congress, and may I say, if the task forces, I've been reading the headlines in the papers, $2.5 billion for education.
Let's stick to the leaders.
And I should have gotten into the headlines about so many more
billions
for housing.
We'll stick to the leader.
Let me just say this,
Who is your leader?
There is no one leader in the Republican Party,
in other words,
I see it today.
You do not.
As a matter of fact, when President Eisenhower was president, we still had a Republican policy committee in the House of Representatives, and there were some occasions when there were differences of opinion about what ought to be done.
Well, I know, but are you saying that you didn't recognize President Eisenhower as the Republican leader?
Well, he was the president and the Republican leader, but there were differences of opinion, and sometimes those were harmonized, and we tried to harmonize them.
Am I to understand from your answers that you do not recognize Vice President Nixon as
no, you
the
are
Republican
not to
leader.
Understand that.
Well,
if you want me to say to you, Mr. Spivak, and I think that's putting it kind of unfairly, that Dick Nixon is going to call every shot for
all
of the Republicans in the House and the Senate in respect to what we do, then the answer obviously is no.
No, sir,
but
I'm not asking
you. If you're asking me, is his voice going to be an important one in the councils of the Republican Party for the next 2 and 4 years, the answer is yes.
No, sir, the question I'm asking you, is the Republican Party leaderless?
No, the Republican Party isn't leaderless.
Well, who is your leader?
I think probably it has more Abel Compton leaders in the Democrat Party, but we won't go into that any further.
Mr. Harkness.
Senator Dirksen, you're on the Judiciary Committee. You said the other day that the Republicans had the duty of a thorough going into of Robert Kennedy's record. You also had this line which rather struck me. You said, if the fears that some people have are materialized, we can at least say this is the record that has been developed by the Republicans. Now, what did you have in your mind when you said fears of some people?
Well, exactly what I said before. There have been any number of telegrams and letters expressing some apprehension that a young man who has had only a modest amount of indoctrination in the law, and certainly no extended law practice, as everyone knows, might not have the competence to be Attorney General of the United States. You're bossing a big department involving a good many divisions. You're expected to be a lawyer who goes before the Supreme Court and argues cases. You're expected to have good legal background. And I think on the point of competence and fitness, the record ought to be made so that if the question ever arises in the future, we can simply say there is the record, and it must speak for itself.
Senator, there was just this exchange between Congressman and Mr. Spivak on leadership. Do you see a Goldwater-Rockefeller fight for control of your party?
Oh, I don't know. Having been in this business for a long time, one could easily speculate on that. You know that every once in a while words are uttered that seem a little derogatory of either one or the other.
Well, there seemed to be some the other day.
Yeah, those don't bother me very much. I think there's a fine cohesive unity in the Republican Party, and notwithstanding these little sallies in the field of personalities, we get along pretty well.
Well, you see Goldwater and Roosevelt and Rockefeller then marching together in shoulder-to-shoulder in cohesive unity.
Well, I would say this to you. If Nelson Rockefeller were the candidate, I would bet all the tea in China that Barry Goldwater would support him.
How about the other way around?
Exactly so.
Mr. Bell.
Congressman Halleck, you were mentioning a moment or two ago some of these recommendations that have been made to President-elect Kennedy. I think you mentioned specifically $2.3 billion for housing and some of these other spending programs. There was also a recommendation recently for a tax cut, if necessary, to counter a recession. How would the Republicans in the House feel about a tax cut and an increase in spending at this point?
Well, I can speak only for myself, Mr. Bell.
Well, I think you speak very well for most of the Republicans
in
the House.
I hope so. I would say this, that we believe in fiscal responsibility. The country, with the draining out of our gold reserves, the other things that we all know about, must be prudent in our fiscal... We've got to be prudent in our fiscal policy. And... So, to me, it would be nice work if you could get it to spend $15 or $17 billion more. Apparently, with these task forces reporting that the predictions made during the campaign as to the additional billions that would be spent, if they're passed, that would be true. Now, how you protect the savings of the people, the buying power of the people, by adding to that a tax cut as was, I guess, maybe as a final resort recommended by the Samuelson task force and maybe by the AFL-CIO. It just doesn't seem to me that that's in the works, and I would say that, well, as far as I'm concerned, I can't see that at the moment.
Even if the recession gets deeper,
well,
it's your judgment the House Republicans would oppose a tax cut, which seems to be agreed by the economists as the best way in which to shoot some money in the economy right away.
Most of the economists, and I'm kind of one myself, I got an A.B. in economics at Indiana University years ago, Jack, or Mr. Bell, and but I must say much of my economics seems to be kind of outdated. But at any event, from what I've seen in the press, most of them seem to think that maybe some of these other pump priming operations would be better.
Gentlemen, we have about a minute and a half. Mr. Spivak.
Senator Dirksen, do you think it is good or bad for Mr. Dillon to accept the Treasury job?
Well, it's a little hard to pass judgment. He's a competent person. He did an excellent job in the State Department. He is well indoctrinated and versed in the whole fiscal field as a result of his private enterprise. And I'm confident he would make an excellent Secretary of the Treasury. If it was his judgment he should accept, if he was invited, if he had conferred with the president on the matter and there was no objection, I, for one, would certainly put no obstacle in the way.
Aren't you going to have a difficult time making an issue of fiscal policies of the Kennedy administration with Mr. Dillon in there?
Only if Mr. Dillon may have assured somebody that he was going to relent from the positions that he took before. But insofar as I know, no such request was made, and consequently, he isn't called upon to forfeit the convictions he had and that he uttered when he was doing business under the incumbent Eisenhower administration.
Mr. Spivak, could I just make one observation? A little bit ago, I think I said something about a question being unfair. Could I take that back?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Very happy to have you take it back.
I take it back.
Mr. Halleck, New York Times quoted you recently as saying, and I quote,
Mr. Wilson, I'm afraid we're not
going to
have
it. Well, I can't quote it.
You can't quote it, and he can't ask it.
Times talked about the Halleck threat, but I don't believe it's too bad.
He's saved by the gong. I'm sorry to interrupt, but our time is up, gentlemen. Thank you very much, Senator Dirksen and Representative Halleck, for being with us.
Monitor's thanks to Senator Dirksen, Congressman Halleck, and to the members of the Meet the Press panel, Lyle Wilson of UPI, Jack Bell of the Associated Press, Richard Harkness, NBC News, and Lawrence Spivak. Meet the Press, celebrating its 16th anniversary on the air. Now, some important words about care. Do you know how many bushels of corn we can grow on an acre of farmland in the United States? Well, the answer is about 50 bushels. But in India, farmers can only grow about 12 bushels on an acre. One of the main reasons for this is the lack of simple, proper tools. And tools are what you now can send to underdeveloped countries through CARE. Of course, you can still send food, too, the food that makes the difference between a vital people and a tired, hungry, sick, inefficient population. Send a CARE Food Crusade package in your own name and perhaps in the names of your friends on their birthdays and anniversaries. Remember, with $1 bill, you can send 432 glasses of milk to an orphanage. And you can contribute towards a plow for a farmer, a net for a refugee fisherman. Just send your contribution to CARE, New York 16. That's all the address you need. CARE, New York 16. Now here in Monitor, this is Ben Grau with one more statement to make before this half hour is over. Although Monitor's a live program, some portions are pre-recorded.
This is Monitor, the NBC weekend radio service.